Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Hercules and the Space Gods. I am Hercules Invictus, and tonight I am proud to present Nick Curto Presents the Urantia Book with host Nick Curto. Greetings and welcome, Nick. How are you today?
Oh, thank you very much, Hercules. It was one glorious day here in Manhattan. It was a very comfortable temperatures. The sun was out, and it was just one of those days that you just love. Early fall, a treat.
May it remain pleasant and fair-weathered.
Absolutely.
I'm happy that you have Byron back. He's been on the show before, so I'm looking forward to what you and he will be speaking of tonight.
Okay, well, again, it's going to be a dynamite program. Again, to our listeners, a warm welcome to you all. This is Nick Curto Presents the Urantia Book, a live 60-minute podcast, and I'm Nick Curto, your host. The Urantia Book has now been translated into 28 world languages, with more on the way. It is sold in the better bookstores worldwide, and you may also both read and listen to the book on the Internet on the following two websites. So if you get a piece of paper and a pen, these are amazingly well-designed and very informative websites, and I highly recommend them. I'm going to give them to you right now. The first one is www.urantiabook.org. Again, urantiabook.org. The other one is www.urantia.nyc. Okay, let's get right to it. Tonight, my featured guest on the program is a longtime reader and a very active member of the Urantia Book family. A very warm welcome to you, Byron Bilitis, and I hope I got that pronounced right, your last name. Correct me if I didn't.
Yeah, it's Bilitis. Close enough. Thanks, Nick. And it's great to be back on the show and talking to you again.
Absolutely. Been looking really very much forward to this. I want to read for our listeners a very short, and considering all the things that you do, this is a very, very short indeed bio. Let me just take a look at that so we get some introduction here. Byron is a leading component of the Urantia Book, with training in philosophy, psychology, history, theology, and is a recent graduate from the Union Theological Seminary in New York City. He is a publisher, editor, and co-author of numerous acclaimed and award-winning books, including many related to the Urantia Revelation. A student of the Urantia Book for over four decades, he has spoken about its teachings at many conferences and on innumerable radio and television programs, including appearances on the, I'm going to get this, Gorium TV, I'll probably get that wrong, Coast to Coast AM Radio with George Norrie, very much familiar with that one. He is most recently author of Your Evolving Soul, The Cosmic Spirituality of the Urantia Revelation, 2017. He has also co-authored or edited five previous books about the Urantia Revelation. Most recent, The Adventure of Being Human, 2, 2015, Healing a Broken World, 2013, and The Adventure of Being Human in 2011. That is extraordinary. And I'm going to ask my first question, Byron, to you, is how did you first come across the Urantia Book?
Well, Nick, that's takes us back to the mid-70s when, we were seekers in those days, and in the midst of the, sort of the chaos of that era, I was seeking something really different to explain the situation that we were facing, you know, in the world. And I was up really late one night, and somebody came on a campus radio show and started really, you know, sort of pitching the Urantia book. And the guy was really articulate, and the next day I ran to a bookstore and got it. And that's how it happened. Wow. It was 1974. Yeah. And I never found out who this guy was, oddly enough. But he, there he
that,
was.
That was
going
to be my next question. It would be so interesting to perhaps have coffee with him sometime, and I think that he would be very happy with how your path has changed and taken on such an amazing route with the Urantia book. But, oh, that's interesting. I found my experience. I was in a Unitarian church 2 years, going there every Sunday morning, and 2 years into that, the minister said, for our last reading of this service, we're going to read from the Urantia book. And I thought, I've never heard of that. Maybe it's an Eastern Indian or something like that. And he read two paragraphs. And Byron, I was like a deer in the headlights. I was like shaken in a very good way. And when everybody filed out of the Unitarian Church, I had to sit there for perhaps 20 minutes because I really had to calm down. I was like, it was amazing. It resonated to me on such a level, and I was saying the word Urantia all the way home so I wouldn't forget the name, this funny name, because I had to track it down. Anyhow, that's my little story. Now, I wanted to go into your upcoming, I think you're working on it, the Double Default and the Triple Blessing, the Urantia book and the Hidden History of Epical Revelation. That title has got me right away, so please tell us a lot about that.
I'd be happy to do that. It's forthcoming, and just getting started, really. And it's a thesis I've been onto for a number of years, which is a way of sort of summarizing the history of Urantia in the text, but not specifically the on-the-ground history, but more what the celestials have been doing for us, what the heavens have been doing for us with epical revelation and the sort of history of that, but also the fact that the double default, of course, refers to the fact that the first two great visitations, celestial visitations, went astray and were defaulted. So the double default, but there's a compensatory response known that I just kind of coined this phrase, triple blessing, which refers to the third, fourth, and fifth epical revelations according to the Urantia book, which, as we know, were in the account, the narration of that's in the UB, of course, where the third one is the advent of Machaventa Melchizedek, leading, of course, to the incarnation of Christ Michael, and then finally the Urantia book itself, which is the fifth epical revelation if you are a believer. So it's a way of kind of giving a kind of a top-down view of all of these epical events. And it's a big job, Nick, as you know, to get this across, because a lot of the stuff is just totally covered over, obscured, obfuscated. We don't know much. People just don't know anything about the Luther Rebellion, and just a tiny bit from the Bible, and a little bit of the Quran, and apocryphal texts talk about it in their poetic way or symbolic ways. But wow, we really need to know what the Luther Rebellion is, especially today. So the book starts out with the first great default, the Luther Rebellion, 200,000 years ago, and goes from there. So that's a kind of an overview of what I'm doing, and really been working on this for a really long time, and I'm happy to finally get it done in maybe the next 9 months.
You certainly got my attention on this one. I think it's a very needed book. And you were kind enough to send me a couple of sentences on the part 1, 2, 3, and 4. Wait, is it 1, 2, and 3, is it? Is there a 4? No, it's 1, 2, and 3.
Yep.
and
four parts if you want the whole thing. Yeah.
Right. And so I'm wondering, would you like to just give us a brief preview of what part one, and then go into part two, three, and so forth?
Yeah, sure. So the opening part, you know, when you're introducing your Rancher book, you know, you have kind of the problem of framing the discussion for people that don't really know anything about it. So, you know, first part is an overview, and I call it the shock of epical revelation, because really it is a shock to consider that there could be, you know, such a huge project as, you know, the first visitation. I mean, it's astounding. And but each of them is, all five, are these huge, huge projects. And so it is a shock. And I think in the opening, one thing I really want to emphasize is that even your Rancho folks are shocked, in a kind of shock, because they assimilate this huge tome, and they have to really reorient their worldview, and it can take a life, almost like a lifetime, you know, to do it, which is one way to explain why a lot of people don't know about it, because it's really hard to get this across, number one. Number two, you're in a kind of a state of disorientation even after, you know, a decade of reading or 20 years of reading. It's like, well, how do I explain this to my girlfriend, or how do I explain this to my professor? And so that's what I try to do in the opening part by acknowledging that there's a kind of shock factor, and I even call it the shock doctrine of the revelation shock doctrine, sort of like Naomi Klein, you know, with her book, The Shock Doctrine, you know, that you have a philosophic and a theological challenge that you cannot easily surmount, and so how are you going to get your friends to do it and your relatives? So that's the first part. Yeah.
I think we all are in that same boat, in that we're very excited about this incredible masterpiece on so many levels, and to try to describe to someone else who's never heard of it, that is one of the challenges of all time. So I think that's very needed. So your prelude is absolutely right on the money to be addressing that issue.
All right, Nick, I've added a chapter, actually, since I sent you that, which is to the prelude, to the first part of this book, and that's about sort of a summary of the problem of evil and rebellion on our planet. I want to summarize that in this opening for folks to focus in on that issue in particular, because that's really what the book is about, is the problem of evil and suffering on planet Earth, on Urantia, and how we reconcile so much, you know, so much suffering and chaos and warfare and epidemics and everything. How do we reconcile that with the idea of a loving God and all-powerful creator? How can we do that? And that's the sort of the conundrum that the book is mainly focused on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and the kind of break that down into three parts, actually, the book is answering three big questions, which, you know, been on my mind, and in a very practical sense, you know, for decades, really. Like, number one is, you know, you and I are the same kind of boomer generation, and, you know, we grew up with a real convoluted situation, because in the 60s, there was this sort of tremendous sense of hope, inspiration, you know, JFK, you know, what can you do for your country, and sort of the idealism of that era that has really continued down to the present. There's a kind of idealism that came across and a sense of a new era, new age, and the optimism that people had, the advent of all of these really cool sort of traditions, wisdom traditions, mystical traditions that were coming through in the 60s, all that great stuff. But then at the same time, you have this very dark element. I mean, I don't even have to go into it, right? I mean, the Vietnam War, the, you know, this big, big, you know, battles the country was going through over the war, and then the shocking assassinations of the very best, politicians, really, that era, you know, ending with, you know, the assassination of King, Martin Luther King. I mean, how could you live through such things and not become really downcast and cynical, which is kind of what happened. And what I found, Nick, is that in the 70s, at least for me and, you know, my circle, people were both really pessimistic and also idealistic at the same time. It was convoluted.
Absolutely. What you're saying is absolutely right on the money on that. It was such a 6 of 1, and then wham, you got the other side, and wham, it was back and forth. It was a very challenging time. Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to get this across to young people who didn't go through this, but it was like the 70s was this, I call it the convolution revolution.
Okay.
I mean, you know, I was really got to be pretty cynical by the mid-70s, you know, right? Nixon had been forced out of office and, you know, the bombing of Cambodia and this massive genocide that resulted and, you know, the atrocities in Vietnam and, like, God, you know. But yet we were idealistic and we were like, you know, in my case, you know, I was running off to these meditation retreats and it was the new age and we were going to have this, you know, enlightenment was going to come and revolution. Mm-hmm. And like, what, you know, so what has occurred to me is that is the archetype of our planet. It's like this zigzag history. It's you have progress and then you have a huge regression.
Oh, yeah.
You had, you know, just think about, I don't know, say if you studied history, you know, the period before World War One, there was a lot of progress in a lot of areas of science, religion, mm-hmm. you know, and medicine, and everything was going pretty well, particularly in Europe and the United States, Industrial Revolution, and then you have World War One. And it just wrecks, you know, the world, the Western world at least, in this, you know, calamitous. Like, how do you get these two things happening at the same time? And yet you do. Christianity is a good example because in Christianity, in that point, you know, because I was just a student of kind of the history of Christianity and church history at Union Theological Seminary, and one of the things that really came across was Christianity really reached a high point in that period with what they call liberal Christianity, and social gospel Christianity was really just fabulous and development that fell to pieces because of World War One. And people don't generally know this, but the pessimism that came out of that war really destroyed the church in Europe. And the what they call liberal Christianity, kind of migrated to the United States. And that was an optimistic view of the human future, that we could perfect ourselves, that we could surmount, you know, sort of the sinful nature of mankind. That kind of thing wasn't going to fly after World War One in Germany and France and elsewhere. They just kind of gave up on it, and that's where you have this regression in Christianity to fundamentalism. And the European version of that was there was, the fundamentals in the United States is one thing, but the European version is known as neo-Orthodox Christianity, where they just they look, all we got is the Bible, and we got to just not get liberal about it, but just whatever it says and go with that, so that became predominant in Europe, and that wasn't going to work with sophisticated people, and so the church became marginal in Europe and England, and I mean in France, particularly places like in Denmark, Sweden, and Europe went secular. So look at the calamity you get. On the one hand, you get this progress, and then you get this breakdown, right? And then so things start to pick up again, and particularly in the United States, then you get a depression. the 20s was a kind of an optimistic period. Then you get the depression, then you're down, then you get World War II, then you come out of World War II, with the Holocaust and Hiroshima, and then things begin to look good again in the 50s and 60s.
What a roller coaster ride, truly, what a roller coaster ride worldwide we've had. And these are all really good examples of that. Yeah.
Look at China, Japan. Japan just went through insanity. With their war, war effort becoming part of the Axis with Hitler, and how they really destroyed the country. Where does this come from? I mean, now look at the Japanese. They're very peaceful. They're very productive and creative. So this is kind of the big theme to try to explain. How do we get this checkerboard pattern of sort of good and evil side by side all the time? What kind of a God allows this, you might say?
Well, what you're saying here is a primary, absolute primary question, and I think that everybody, I don't care what your spirituality or religion is, you face that big question. You have to face that all the time. It's a pivotal question.
So I have two other key questions, Dick, if I may introduce those that go along with
please.
This.
Please, please.
And they're pretty different. They're kind of premised on the first question, like why this sort of creativity side by side with nihilistic self-destruction? Why do we have it? Secondly, why do we have no clear story of human origin? In other words, not so much biological origin, but cultural origin of humanity. Why do we have? Why don't we really know how we got started into civilization? Why is this such misty, obscure origins? Like one side, Christians say, well, we started out with the fall of man, the fall of humankind. And then secular people say, well, we just kind of rose up and found, new technologies and, and then there's sort of the new age / ancient aliens people.
Right.
Right. So that there was ancient astronauts came to Earth, right? So the biggest running series in the History Channel is Ancient Astronauts, and so this theory that astronauts from other worlds came here and cross fertilized their genes with ours, right? So this is the best selling book of the 1990s. That period is Zechariah Sitchin saying that it was the Anunnaki that came here.
Right.
Right. And they enslaved the kind of the primitive humans and then spliced their genes and created a slave race and 200 almost a half million years ago. Then there was a rebellion, and that in my circles, that's kind of almost a prevailing view, and it's really a big deal because it's like in the face of the biblical tradition, which the biblical traditions were created in the image of God.
Right.
And that's Abrahamic. That's Jewish, Christian, and Islamic. So here comes this thing, which says no, we're not. We're created in the image of the Anunnaki from this other planet, turn us into slaves. I mean that's a kind of a pretty bizarre thing to believe, but it got promulgated in the mass media. And then there was really the biggest UFO conference of all time was the Contact in the Desert in 2015, 2014, which, 3,000 people, that was like a Woodstock of ufology. And there I went to that.
Oh.
And actually spoke there because I happen to know the conveners well enough to pitch this story. I'm telling you, I said, look, you got to have a Urantia person, and they said, all right, we'll put you, we'll put you in a side room, kind of thing.
Side room. Oh,
yeah, kind of like
great.
Yeah, because they know and I know, the Urantia thing is too obscure to have, put somebody like me on a main stage, right? So they had these people, mainly the Zechariah Sitchin, ancient astronauts people, were the featured speakers.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it's about. This is how we got here. This is, the Eric von Daniken, right? Chariots of the Gods. And that's,
we get,
right? Well, that was the other big guy, right? He was the first of these people. So Bill von Daniken keynote and all the key followers of Zechariah Sitchin, who then became media stars. So they put me in a side room. and they had me back the next year, but then after that, I got disinvited because, it's a minority position and nobody wants to hear about the Christian, side of this, the Christ-centered picture of humanity. So that's the number two. So that's the second thing I want to address in this book. And the third thing is the question of why we don't have a leadership, a high quality leadership on planet Earth right from the beginning. When you look all the way back,
boy. It's
really studied this.
Wow. That's a pivotal. Yeah.
It's pivotal. And you just look at anything. Look at Chinese history, right? China had some great leaders. I mean, but they mainly, Confucius, great leader, but he was unknown in his lifetime. Later, they picked up on his teachings, but it was always used as a political tool. Confucianism was a tool used against the Buddhists and the Taoists, so there was warfare. There was a lot of civil war in China, and China now and then would have some good period, in the 8th century in China, there was a period of peace and enlightenment that was really the high point of China. What was the name of that dynasty? The Tang Dynasty. But it didn't last very long. It was a short-lived, although they built very, very good infrastructure and cities, but then after a period of time, it dissolved into a catastrophic civil war, really the greatest civil war ever in the world, destroyed that great, kind of golden age in China. And that's the pattern you see all over the world. You have leaders, let's say Charlemagne, coming up in France, and it's kind of an enlightened period. But that legacy gets turned into warfare and oppression. And then the Dark Ages. So you can't really, in the United States, let's say FDR. That was a period of Reconstruction in the United States. And then after his death, you get Truman, who launches the Cold War and the CIA and the military-industrial complex. And you just get this checkerboard pattern. You know, the leadership is just not there. And so for your answer book readers, I think they probably know what I'm driving at, which is that a planet, a normal planet, has a visible celestial leadership. That's how you stabilize the planet. That's how you stabilize the governance of the planet. That's the Adam and Eve of the planet. And that's the invisible presence of the planetary prince as well. And those are the ostensible leaders of the planet. And so we don't have that kind of that kind of thing, and we have to extemporize. And we got, you know, angels that are assisting, but don't forget, you know, most of the angelic hosts went over to the side of Lucifer. So you can't even count on the angelic support think of Ashoka, who was the greatest Buddhist leader in India. That was an enlightened period during his lifetime, and you would have thought, well, you know, the angels are probably helping him, but it went south after about 100 years. So that's because, I want to cover in the book, is because Caligastia, you know, the fallen planetary prince, the apostate planetary prince, was leading the planet into perdition, into his scheme. So we have this leadership gap that is, you know, catastrophic for the entire history of human civilization. So that's the third of the three. So the first one, again, was sort of the checkerboard zigzag pattern of good and evil, of progress and regress. That's number one. Number two is we don't know who we are. We don't have a good idea of our origin. Are we made in the presence of God or in the presence of extraterrestrial exploiters? Who are we? And the first one, we don't have that. And who are our leaders? We don't, you know, we're kind of orphans without leadership. So these are the things that this book is answering by telling the story of the epical revelations.
Well, I think the way you're structuring this is absolutely right on target, absolutely true. I've never felt so much threats in my lifetime than right now. And I went through everything as you did that you just mentioned earlier. But right now, I just feel as though there is an aggressive, huge fight right now between good and evil that is, it's in your face. You can't not see it. And it's out there, and it's right there. And I think more people, I will say right now, are seeing this more clearly than ever before.
Glad you said that, Nick, because that's a critical point for this discussion, which is really that there was this covert domain, this covert action, so to speak, behind the scenes through the entire history of the planet. Now and then you could get a glimpse of something, and then you'd sink beneath the waves, right? So you could say during the English Civil War, you know, it was, you know, the 16th century, you know, it was a calamitous, but a one little group came above the fray, in my view, were the Quakers, right? The Quakers got this vision of a peaceful, harmonious world based on meditation and looking within to the spark of God within, right? So, yeah, one little glimpse, and then the Quakers, you know, fall into obscurity. They have to flee to the United States, and then later the Quakers had a big split in the 19th century, and they were effective for a time, you know, abolition of slavery. But, you know, they've really been marginalized. So, you know, you just get this again and again, and how do you explain? Well, now I think it's a little different because I think it's the pressure of the Holy Spirit. I think it's the pressure energetic pressure, or as the Urantia calls it, spiritual pressure from above, right? You remember that phrase? You know, this is we can transform your world. You know, in other words, we don't have visible leaders. We don't have an Adam and Eve. We don't have a planetary capital led by our planetary prince. But we'll give you spiritual pressure from above, which will bring out what's really going on. So the covert realm of the Luciferic elites gets pushed to the surface by spiritual forces and by the fact that there really has been some evolutionary progress. Really, there truly has. There's been natural progress. There's been biological progress. There's been progress in industry, education. There has been progress. There's enough of us that can think and read and, you know, get together on the internet that we can begin to feel and see what has never been visible, which is that there's a Luciferic covert leadership that takes control, the controllers, the planetary controllers, and that it, you know, just struck me yesterday, actually a few days ago, Nick. After 9/11, there was like, okay, there's a war on terror, there's terrorism, there's terror. There's terrorists. So everything's about the war on terror. And so you got years of like, terrorists are going to get me. Terrorists are going to get me. So when that kind of runs out, then there's a little period of, well, it's not so bad. And then before long, you got a pandemic. Right? So now the virus is, so everybody's talking about this, It usually goes like this. You have a false flag operation, and then CNN picks it up first, and everybody else picks it up, and then the narrative gets piped out to everybody, and everybody, except for this minority of people, of dissidents like you and me, we get marched in into this false, fear. Well, same thing with COVID. And this is how it works. But now with the COVID thing is pretty rapidly unraveling. War on Terror didn't unravel for a while.
Yep.
It took more time. A lot more damage was done, even though we knew that the war in Iraq right away was pretty much understood that was based on deception and lies about weapons of mass destruction. But with regard to COVID, I think there was a really strong element of doubt, and now it looks like it's all over. I don't think they're going to make it. I mean, you're in New York, where it looks like they're really going to prevail. But I'm in Florida, and down here, people don't buy it.
It's heartening to know that is going on down there, and other places like places in Texas and other places, these people have woken up and see things as they really are. And it's a shock. It's something that's incredibly disturbing, as you know, and you have to rethink everything that the mainstream corporate media has ever said and told you that this is how things are. You have to rethink everything, and it's a very challenging and a very painful process, as I'm sure you know, to really rethink things and say, I want to know the truth. I really want to know the truth. Teach me, where is it, and seek that. I think that is going on right now, big time.
It's just so much work, isn't it, Nick? I mean, you're going to spend an hour a day looking at the latest on COVID, the latest deceptions. You're looking at, four, five, six videos every day or articles. You're hearing from your friends, how many people have been deplatformed, off of YouTube?
Oh, a lot. Absolutely, a lot. Which, when that first started happening, I couldn't believe that it was actually taking place. I thought, this can't be happening. They just can't say, we're taking you off. You're being totally deplatformed. Goodbye. And making those decisions. I just couldn't, at the beginning of that, it was, well, still around, but it was such a shock that they could do something like that. And of course, they're doing it aggressively right now.
I mean, you know,
control. That's what it is, control.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
how
control.
The hell do you – yeah, I mean, but it's life and death. I mean, you know, you know, when I first heard about hydroxychloroquine, I thought, well, that doesn't sound like – that doesn't quite sound – you know, but, man, they – you know, everywhere you turn, they made that sound like something terrible. And then, you know, quickly, it was my own doctor that put on this thing on YouTube saying, look, I've been working with that kind of stuff for 40 years. It's a safe. It's okay. You
that's
know,
right.
We're going to start using it. And then he gets kicked off. And then, by the third and fourth month, I'm like, wait a minute. This is, you know, and so it just keeps going and going and going and going. So how do they get away with it, you know?
It's called greed, The big word is greed, absolute greed, because if you can purchase something for fairly reasonable amounts of money and it works, you have to totally say this is evil, this is bad, it won't work, it's crazy, don't even think about doing it, and then you present something that is like 100 times more expensive and say, this is the only thing that really works, this is what you should, I mean, that's what's going on. It's greed, greed, greed.
I think it's greed, but I think the Urantia book can help us look even beneath that to even darker motives.
Oh yeah.
So that's the thing that is the Caligastian or the Luciferic satanic issue, which is not only is it war profiteering or, you know, big pharma profiteering, it's also malicious.
Oh yeah.
For its own sake, it's getting a kind of a psychic supply, as they call it, from the suffering of others, and that goes. It's really a stretch to say something like that. I recognize it, but that is what we're told in the UB, because the iniquity of the rebels is actually it's their battle against Christ Michael. It's their distaste for the love of Christ Michael and the mercy and the governance and the sovereignty of and his sovereignty and their defiance. And that's not just about money, power, and control. That's spiritual. It's a spiritual blight, and you want to spread it around. And it's taken me my whole life, really, to face up to that this is. It's not just sort of like Ralph Nader telling you that the corporations are bad. You know, it's a spiritual blight. We need a Martin Luther King, a prophetic stance. Not just a political stance. This is evil. This is evil for its own sake, and to stand against that is both political and spiritual. But you know, it becomes a question of tactics.
Yes.
In a way, and I think that knowing the Urantia framework improves your. You know, for example, a lot of Christian friends, and sort of the patriotic, so-called patriotic Christian opposition to the vaccines, right? And,
oh, yeah.
And so they're assigning to this biblical precepts that this is Satan's fight against us in the end times, and the vaccine is the mark of the beast, which symbolically there's something there for sure, but we have an updated rendition of what that all was about.
Absolutely.
And that's what's needed. So really I dropped this other project that actually I was working on, and so somebody's got to put into the into the thought stream right now that there is another way to think about this, what Christ is doing. And we need a cosmology that is suitable for our time, not a biblical cosmology. In order to
I couldn't agree with you more. And this has never been more needed, and I totally mean this, than right now. This is what we want, this is what we need, and I think the world needs to see this perspective right now, because we are in the battle of our lives. I really feel that. Good and evil, it's like the last showdown. It feels like the last showdown. That's how a lot of my friends have said the same thing. It's in your face. It's here. And it's very real. And you have to have a perspective to get through the challenges that we're all facing.
You know, we make common cause with all of these folks that see through this. And we don't want to, you know, splinter the opposition too much, but we want to lead with new revelation. But do it gently, and try to get this across. It's not easy, but it's the leadership of what's coming. It seems important or imperative for your Rancho folks to step forward and say, look, we have a deeper analysis of this, and we have some solutions that Christians wouldn't have thought of, such as governance. We need to strengthen the UN, create a new world order, not a new world order like the elite, not the Great Reset, like the Davos people. No, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the grassroots global democracy.
Absolutely.
You can't get that from the Bible, but you can get that from the Urantia book. And what does that really come down to? It means something like this. There are going to have to be lawsuits in the International Criminal Court for crimes against humanity.
Absolutely.
For those that created a bioweapon and locked down the whole planet. Now, a Urantia framing of that is better. The Urantia book says what really was supposed to have happened was the UN was supposed to be in a position to lead the world, or the World Health Organization is so weak and underfunded that somebody like Bill Gates could take over it.
Yeah.
Well, what's that
big
about?
Time.
You know, that's the same misleadership that we get. But the Urantia framing would say, no, I mean, you know, we're supposed to have global leadership through a global democracy of a world federation. We're supposed to fund the World Health Organization, and we're supposed to regulate the regulators so that they don't become corrupted by corporate interests.
Absolutely.
And you know, Christians aren't getting that kind of thing across. They're saying, well, we have to just, you know, localize, and we have to just, you know, withdraw into our enclaves and, you know, prepare for, you know, the end times.
That's all over the internet, as you know.
We do have to be preppers, you know, because this thing is pretty unstable. But what is the leadership that will come out of that, out of this kind of crash? And that's the kind of the last part of this book I'm working on, is how the UB talks about the future. The next
we need that too.
Event.
The perspective of that, what is being said here, absolutely. And it's never been more needed than right now. I want to ask you, do you have any idea of when your book will be out? Is there any guess, a good guess?
Mid 2022, but I'll probably do things in the meantime, essays and also a short film. You know,
fantastic. Yeah. Oh, that would be absolutely right on the money. That would be great, and that's needed.
Yeah,
and that would
we got to
pave the way
and get this going. And but you know, I have because Christians think that Christ will come back in this judgment at the end of the dispensation and judge the earth, and there'll be the rapture, and that this is all mythic, symbolic, from the book of Revelation, it's so archaic. What we're going to have, the Ranch book explains, we're going to have a progression, adjudication of the Lucifer Rebellion on high, and we will have a progression to a new era, a magisterial mission, if you will, which will, eventually there'll be a new incarnation. And that is what we need to point people to. And it's not that hard, because not only in Christianity are they looking for this, in Islam I discovered they're looking for it's called the Mahdi. It's the return of this sort of like the future Muhammad. And in Buddhism they have the Maitreya, who's the future Buddha of the future.
Mm-hmm.
And they really think, so there's this worldwide looking for a new global leadership from on high. And we need to exalt that, and that's what the last part of the book is about, is that's the hope of the world. It's up to us, to co-create that. Our free will is sacrosanct, and they can't impose it on us. And we need to get our ducks lined up, get ourselves ready and in a cooperative position with the celestials, with the angelic host. So, I guess I sound pretty fervent about it, but it's pressing on us all the time.
Oh boy, is it ever. I got to insert right here because I'm looking at the clock. Boy, did this go fast. I knew it was going to, and it just whizzed by. I want to just say to our listeners out there that if you'd like to contact either me or Byron with any of your comments or questions, you can reach out to us. I'm going to give you my email address, and if it's for Byron, I will forward it on to him. And my email address is NICKNYNY1, and that's the numeral one, not O-N-E, but the numeral one at gmail.com. I'm going to repeat it, NICKNYNY1 at gmail.com. And if when we do get any replies, we will certainly be happy to answer them. Byron, what are your final thoughts? We have a couple more minutes. What would you like to leave at this moment for this particular program?
Thanks, Nick, really, again, for bringing me on. And I guess my final thought is that we're talking about external events, but the real basis of this is the interior life. It's the life of faith. It's the life of deep meditation, prayer, worship, daily check-in with spirit, get aligned with the divine will for your life, for your family, for your country, for your planet. I've been just talking mainly about planetary events, but we can't get to that place without really, I think of it as getting still and knowing God is present, and presence of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit is leading us in particular, because that's its job, into the practical details of our lives, and within the angelic support that we get from the seraphim, to straighten our lives, purify ourselves and our families from these influences that are negative, and become become what we want to see in the world with gratitude and with the willingness to obey the commandments that we've been given by Jesus when he was here, to love ourselves and our neighbor as ourselves, and to love God with all of our heart. And only through that vehicle can we, you know, cut through this Luciferic, you know, the final, you know, stand of the Luciferic forces. That's how we're going to do it. We're going to do it through spiritual power. The tactics and strategies we've been talking about are a result of that power, that power from on high that flows into us through daily practices. So maybe leave it with that, Nick.
Oh, absolutely. Amen to all of that, Byron, for sure. I'd like to ask you if you will consider being my first guest for the new year, and to continue on this quest for truth and for justice, and to tell the folks about the most loving, incredible, thrilling, and insightful masterpiece of a book, the Urantia book, truly is. The revelation is exactly coming at the right time and at the right place. And I thank God every day for this incredible book. Byron, my heartfelt thanks to you for being on this particular podcast program with me tonight. It was truly a pleasure, and please do return. And if possible, I'd like to have you for my first guest for the new year.
I'd love that. I'd love that, Nick. And, you know, you're my good brother, New York City, and love you a lot. And let's keep our thread going.
Absolutely. The same goes for you. Much love to you. This is Nick Curto, presents the Urantia book. I want to wish you all an enlightened life journey. Till next time, please explore the deep wisdom and limitless love contained in the Urantia book. Stay safe and be very, very kind to one another. Goodbye for now. Much love to you all out there and to everyone, everywhere. Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you very much, Nick. Thank you very much, Byron. We're going to close with our Olympian disclaimer. Aristotle suggested that entertaining new thoughts without feeling obliged to accept them is a wise practice to cultivate. We agree. Our Olympian podcasts explore interesting thoughts and viewpoints on a variety of topics, including health, religion, and politics. Our exploration is one of personal opinions and sometimes systems of belief. Our discussions in this forum are sincere and enthusiastic, but they're not to be construed as Olympian endorsements of any particular point of view. Listen, learn, make up your own mind. Thank you very much, and until next time, this is Hercules Invictus wishing you joyous journeys and amazing adventures. And we're going to close with If You Can Dream by Virginia Ackley.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if you can dream. Dream till you wake. Dream till you feel. Dream till you know it. Dream till it's real. If you can dream, then you can be bound by love and yet be free, but only if you untrustworthy.